Where we at? All right. I'm going to call to order the regular meeting of the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, May 3rd, 2010. My apologies to my colleagues for being late this evening. I had a family matter I needed to attend to, but nonetheless, I am here. We have a an ambitious agenda, and we will try and move through the agenda in a swift, professional manner. With that, why don't you stand with us for a moment of silence for a recently passed loved one, and then remain standing for our flag salute this evening. Thank you. As we always say, one of the most pleasant parts of our meeting is involving the youth in our meetings, and we've been doing that for many years. And so working with three local elementary schools, the principals typically select a student who has exhibited not only good academics but good citizenship. So we are glad to have with us tonight Matthew Peck. Matthew is 11 years old and a fifth grade student at Fairgrove Elementary School. He enjoys learning new things, playing with friends at recess, and talking with friends at lunch. Sounds like me. Matthew likes going to the beach with his family. He enjoys fishing with his stepdad, playing in the water with his skimboard and boogie board, and playing in the sand. In high school, he would like to take courses in woodshop and electronics. And in college, he would also like to take electronics. Matthew enjoys all kinds of sports. Mostly, he likes football, soccer, and softball. I believe Matthew is accompanied by, are your parents here, Matthew?
Yeah.
Okay. The stepdad, and you have a sister? Okay. And don't be shy. You can come up and take photos if you'd like. You don't have to stay back there.
Sure.
Okay. Come on in. So, Matthew, would you like to do something against the league?
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If you don't leave, we have something for you. And thank you for coming down and leading us in our flag salute. So take that off your side. Go with us so you can take your picture. You get that, Dad?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Want to
thank you, Mr. Pines. Appreciate your coming down.
Matthew, thanks for coming. Enjoyed me having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matthew, and keep up the good work at school, okay? All right. Okay, what roll call, Donald?
Here.
Councilman
Myers.
Here.
Councilman Peterson is absent.
Here.
Here. Let's move to our closed session announcements. And City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements this evening?
On the April 19, 2010 meeting, council met in closed session and discussed conference with legal counsel on existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9A, Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria, etc., et al., and related cross actions, Santa Clara Superior Court case number CV770214. Council went back into open session, and there was nothing reportable in the closed session action.
Very good. Thank you, City Attorney. Let's move on to agenda review this evening. This is where the council reviews the agenda as presented by staff and determines if we want to make any changes to the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
I move that we accept the agenda as published.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? None. Motion carries. Moving on to our ceremonial calendar, and this is drawing to select monthly winners of the Local Economic Stimulus Program Shop Local, Shop Loyal campaign. Shop and dine in Grover Beach. Ms. Chapman.
Yeah, our student left. Honorable Mayor and City Council, tonight we're going to be drawing for the 10 shop and dine winners. For those of you who don't know, all you need to do is collect 10 stickers on the back of a shop and dine in Grover Beach card, and you can be eligible to win $50 in shop and dine certificates that can be used at the participating merchants. And who would you like to have draw tonight, Mr. Mayor?
Very good. How about Mr. Lee? You know,
Mr.
I was going to pick on you. I was going to pick on the men in uniform, but there's too many of them.
We're drawing 10. Chris Lopez. Cheryl Gilbride. Richard Peterson. Gracia Bello.
Well,
our fifth one is Jason Spears. Jay Wells. Christina, and I cannot pronounce her last name, but it looks like it's H-E-O-U. Barbara Shantz is 9. And Joel Anderson is 10.
Very good.
Thank you very much. And congratulations to our winners.
With mine. Wow, very good.
Wow,
that's
very
cool.
Good.
That's smashing.
And Gayla, can you let the audience know how much longer the program is going to be going?
Currently, the program is scheduled to go through our next first council meeting of the month, which is on June 6th, 7th. City clerk's looking up the
Is
date.
City clerk this one, or were there only 9?
Okay, Gayla, how
think
many
there were
cards?
10. 1, 2, 3. Oh, we did miss one. We get to pick one more.
No, I didn't think,
that's my fault.
Maybe
this
one. You have another chance.
John, it's your turn.
This is
yeah.
It.
Yeah.
Mine. Come on, Lee.
Bruce Brown.
That was close. Bill Nichols, Bruce Brown.
We are planning on, at the next city council meeting, bringing back all of the economic stimulus packages for a review for the council. And we have had individuals and businesses who have requested that the item continue for the next fiscal year.
Outstanding. Great. Thank you. Okay, next on our agenda is a proclamation declaring the week of May 9th through the 15th, 2010, as National Police Week. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Thank you. I believe Lieutenant Peters is here to accept this. John, I think I'll read it first and then I'll come out. This is a proclamation of City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring the week of May 9 through 15, 2010, as National Police Week in the City of Grover Beach. Whereas in 1962, the Congress and the President of the United States have designated May 15 as National Peace Officers Memorial Day and the week in which May 15 falls as National Police Week. And whereas it is important that all citizens know and understand the duties, responsibilities, hazards, and sacrifices of their police department. And whereas one of our community's important resources are the brave and devoted police peace officers who willingly dedicate their lives to securing a safe human society for all. And whereas members of the law enforcement agency of the City of Grover Beach unceasingly provide a vital public service as well as play an essential role in safeguarding the rights and freedoms of residents, business owners, and visitors in Grover Beach. And whereas in recognition of National Police Officers Memorial Day, the San Luis Obispo County Criminal Justice Administrators Association will be holding a special day of honor and remembrance for those law enforcement officers who gave us their ultimate sacrifice on Wednesday, May 12, 2010 at 10 a.m. at the Atascadero Veterans Memorial. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby proclaims the week of May 9 through 15, 2010, as National Police Week in Grover Beach and publicly salutes law enforcement officers in our community and in communities across the nation, signed by Mayor John P. Scholes.
Mr. Mayor and members of the council, I do want to thank you for the proclamation for National Police Week to be honored next week. I also want to let everybody know that, again, May 12th, the ceremonies are in Tascadero.
That on May 12th, the ceremonies are in Atascadero this year, and we'll be honoring all those men and women in the law enforcement profession that have unfortunately paid the ultimate sacrifice for the protection of our communities around the country. So, once again, thank you very much for this proclamation.
Thank you, Lieutenant Peters, and I believe the 12th is a Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. Very good. Nice job. Okay, let's move into public communications. This is where any member of the public may address the council for a period of time not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest in the jurisdiction of this council. Is there anyone that would like to address the council in public communications this evening?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Jeff Lee, and I'm with your Parks and Rec and Beautification Committee. Just want to give you a quick update as to what's going on in the Parks and Rec Department. May is a busy month for Parks and Rec. April ended on a good note in the fact that last Friday the city celebrated Arbor Day, and there's about 75 students and staff from the Boys and Girls Club that celebrated that event locally. So coming up in May are a number of events. We'll kick off that with the mother-son dance coming up this Friday out at the community center. And the theme this year is aviation adventures. And so tickets are still available. Check the website at www.grover.org if you have any questions or are interested in purchasing tickets. We carry right over into next Saturday, May 8th, when the Monster Skate Contest comes to town over at the skate park on Ramona Avenue. Registration for that is open at 9 a.m. The competition starts at 10, and we usually get between 35 and 40 skaters to participate. So come on out and between 10 and 3 and enjoy a good time and watch skating or participate if you're so inclined. We continue the month on the 9th, obviously. So with Mother's Day, so don't forget Moms on Sunday. So and then the following week of May 15th, we have the Tiny Tots Ice Cream Social. It is open to the public. You get to enjoy ice cream for $1, but don't forget to bring your checkbooks, as it is a silent auction fundraiser for the program as well. Just looking out a little bit further, June is a quick, we roll right into a quick month of June. June 6th starts the Summer Sizzlin' Concert Series, as well as the Farmers Markets, and also that day is the Spring Garden Tour and the Plant Exchange. So, like I said, busy times in Parks and Rec, and I'm available for any questions.
Excellent report, Commissioner Lee. Any questions?
Good job.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes, thank you. What time does the garden tour begin, please?
Bear with me as I check my cheat sheet. That starts at, it goes from 1 to 4.
Very good.
Okay, great. And
thank
actually,
you.
On a one other note, on a personal representation note for the Parks and Rec Department, Director Petker participated in the fun portion of the Wildflower Triathlon on Friday. She finished in 1 hour 28 minutes, which is probably about 1 hour and 28 minutes before I would even start considering to do that. But she did finish in the top third of all the female participants that did that. So next time you see her, congratulate her and tell her good work for representing the city.
Very good. I was actually wondering what was the fun part. But I think I have a different take on the fun part.
It's considered the short course.
Absolutely.
That's where they serve the beer at the end.
You have any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Excellent report. If there's no one else, I'm going to close public communications and let's move into our public hearings this evening. This is item number 3 on the agenda, and this is the 2010 weed abatement protest hearing. Battalion Chief Heath.
Good evening, honorable mayor and council members. Citywide inspection of properties in violation of weed abatement standards began April 6th and was completed April 20th. Attached council will find a complete listing of the 289 lots that were identified as in violation this year. This year's number of lots found in violation is in line with the historical data over the past 5 years. 75% of the properties were in compliance in 2005, and this year 96%. Well, I'm sorry, 2009 had 96%. As per state government code and city council resolution 1022, the following has taken place. Written notice to abate were mailed to each of the listed property owners from the fire department on April 23rd. A public hearing notice was published in the Tribune on April 23rd also, and the same notice was mailed to the affected property owners regarding weed abatement protest hearing scheduled for this evening's council meeting. A reinspection for compliance of the properties that were noticed is scheduled to begin May 25th with abatement intended to begin June 3rd. The fiscal impact of this action will result in the following: a direct offset of the weed abatement contractor's costs, the fire department staff time, and the necessary supplies, also the city's 25% administrative overhead fees. Over the past 3 years, the average sum of these costs equal approximately $484 per property, which includes the following: $200 contractor fee, $201 staff and materials fee, and plus an $83 city indirect cost. The adequate funding for these costs were provided in the fiscal year budget 2010, and the funding collected from the property tax assessments will be included in the revenue section of the fiscal year budget 2011. If anybody from the public is present in the audience this evening who feel they received a notice in error, my administrative assistant is present this evening, and we can meet outside council chambers. This concludes my staff report, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Very good. Excellent staff report. Any questions of Battalion Chief Heath?
None.
None to my left? Any to my right?
No.
Okay. No? Just real quickly, typically, you were talking about the fiscal impacts. This is obviously if someone does not go out and take care of the weed nuisance themselves. If the city has to hire a contractor, is that money that they will then be billed and we expect to receive back?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It'll be put on their tax bill, and then the city will recoup that money.
Okay. Very good. Okay. There are no other questions. Thank you, Battalion Chief.
Thank you.
And open this up to the public and see if there's anyone from the public who would like to address this item before the council this evening. Seeing that, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. Is there any additional discussion or is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Well, I'll make a motion.
Okay.
That we make a finding that apparently there are no defensible protests and that we order the abatement of the noticed lots and properties. And I think that is... Wait, here we go. Let me make sure that I'm done. Yes, that is my motion.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. And this is a voice vote, it looks like. So all in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None. Motion carries. Thank you, Battalion GP. Good to see you as always. Okay. Let's move on to item number four on our agenda, and this is a review and consideration of recommendations for potential rate adjustments contained in the utility rate study. Administrative Services Director Chapman.
Honorable Mayor and City Council, Gayla Chapman, Administrative Services Director. Tonight we have Clayton Tuckfield from Tuckfield & Associates, who conducted a water rate study for us based on approval by the Council on October 5th of 2009. This was the first study we've had since 2005, and attached in your staff to the staff report you have the draft water rate study. Basically, we're here tonight to review the rate study and to show why we are requesting a 30% increase for fiscal year 11 and a 2% increase in water rates for fiscal year 12. The average single homeowner average rate is 22 cubic feet, which is 100 cubic feet, sorry. And basically, our costs have increased notably due to the cost from Lopez Zone 3. And tonight we're going to have the City Council consider conducting a public hearing for the water rate study and give staff direction on conducting a Proposition 218 hearing for the proposed new water rates. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Tuckfield.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Tuckfield.
Good evening. Tonight I'm pleased to present the results of our water rate study for the City of Grover Beach. This study looked at a variety of information and documents that was provided by the city, including financial audits, budgets, billing information from various customer classifications, and all incorporated into our water rate study this evening. The objectives of the study included several. What we wanted to do was to analyze the water fund, which encompasses all of the expenses related to the water system, look at the historical expenses, historical revenues coming into the fund, and then project forward what the revenues would be and our expense obligations of the fund for the next 5 years. We would then take that information and develop a 5-year forward-looking financial plan. This financial plan would then assess the ability of the current revenues being received by the fund to meet the ongoing obligations that are foreseen for the next 5 years for the fund. Additionally, we would determine any revenue adjustments that we would need to make and ultimately translate into water rates. So the water rate schedule, we would create that to be fair and equitable among our classifications. We want those rates to generate the revenue desired to meet the targets developed in the Water Fund Financial Plan. And lastly, we wanted to maintain and address water conservation. So as Gayla mentioned, in 2005, we conducted a study. At that time, the city implemented a meter replacement program. We determined, they believe the Water Master Plan determined that there were some unaccounted for losses. The new meters then will provide accurate reading information and will curb lost revenue from sales that we were not receiving. So we maximized that revenue. Excuse me. By installing those meters, then we reduce unaccounted for losses so that we don't waste any water. At that time, we also implemented a 4-block residential water rate structure. This was designed to encourage water conservation from our residential customers. 84% of the water sold is from residential customers, so we're targeting the main group. Also with the study, it recommended an increase of 30% in September of 2006 and another 18% increase in July of 2007, which was adopted by City Council and implemented. So it's been 5 years since our last study, and it's been 3 years since our last water rate increase. Now, in analyzing the water fund, I noticed several things, but I've highlighted the three main ones up on the screen here. The operation and maintenance expense and capital costs related to the Lopez water entitlement that the city has increased significantly. The San Luis Obispo County provides a 5-year forecast of the expenses that's related to Lopez to each contractor that receives water from Lopez. Looking backwards, the average annual cost of the last 5 years was about $665,000. Based on the forecast provided by the county going forward, that average annual cost is going to be $1.2 million. Also, in review of the water fund, there's currently a budget deficit. What that means is that the revenues coming into the fund are not sufficient to meet the ongoing obligations of the fund. So what we've been doing is using cash reserves that were in the water fund to meet that deficit for the last few years. So in order to meet that deficit this fiscal year, in speaking with city staff, we're going to borrow money from the Water Conservation Fund that will help us meet that deficit. Also, since we have a deficit and we've used up the reserves, that indicates we have essentially a zero fund balance at the end of this fiscal year because we've used up the cash reserves. So notably then, we need to rebuild those reserves over the next 5 years of this study. Now, for the current study, we made several assumptions that are incorporated into our financial plan. We made an assumption of eight new single-family residential customers would connect to the water system annually over the next 5 years. We've assumed that non-residential customers have stabilized and there are no net additions or subtractions in non-residential. We're also going to plan for a 1% reduction in annual water consumption per customer. Earlier this year, the state adopted the 20 by 2020 water conservation plan. Now, what this is the state is calling for all agencies to reduce their water consumption by 20% by the year 2020. In an effort to recognize that, then, we're going to start planning for a 1% reduction in water consumption for the city of Grover Beach. We've also assumed inflation in expenses, looking at the history of those expenses and then projecting forward in a similar fashion. Our expenses then are included in the study, recognizing that fact. Also, we're going to use the Lopez costs as stated by the county to include into our financial plan. Most notably with the county's expenses, they now represent 45% of the cost to supply water from the city of Grover Beach. So they are substantial expense of the water fund. Additional assumptions, we're going to assume we're going to earn interest at the rate of 1.5% annually on our funds. As I mentioned, the funds are essentially zero right now, so there's not much interest income. But going forward, as we build that reserve back up, we'll earn some interest. We're going to respect the city's current operating reserve policy in relation to the water fund, which says we want to maintain 10% of the cost to operate and maintain the water system as a cash reserve on hand in the fund. So we're going to start from essentially zero at the end of this fiscal year and build that up to 10% by the end of the study period. Also in the financial plan, we're going to have an annual transfer related to capital expenditures of $200,000 annually. This amount pays for whatever capital expenditures we make. We're on a pay-as-you-go capital expenditure basis. Those expenditures total $166,000 this fiscal year, so we're kind of round that up to about $200,000. And then whatever is not spent during each fiscal year in capital then remains as a reserve as for capital. And then this reserve is intended to meet unforeseen capital contingencies to recover from natural disaster in case of an earthquake or similar flooding. And also, if we need to acquire any additional water supply during that emergency, the reserves will help us acquire those. Now, bringing all this information together, we've created a water fund financial plan, which I have presented here graphically. I'll go through the various aspects here to try to explain what we've done. The first year, 2010, that's this current fiscal year 2009-2010. The dark blue column at the bottom represents the cost to operate and maintain the system. The next column up, the purple column, represents what we plan to spend on capital. That's the $200,000 a year I mentioned previously. The green column represents the amount related to Lopez water entitlement. So, as I said before, it represents about 45% of the cost, and that's shown here graphically. The light blue column at the top, that I've labeled as existing debt. What that is the lease purchase payment for the water meters that the city agreed to several years ago, actually. As you can see, that payment then is finished in 2011. So after that, there are no more light blue columns at the top. Now, what's worthy to note on the first year here is the black line represents the current level of revenues being received into the fund. Now, that line is lower than the top of the column for 2010, indicating that we don't have enough revenues coming in to meet the obligations. This is the deficit I was referring to. So since it's really essentially too late in the year to raise rates this year, we're actually going to next year. So to make it through this year, we're going to borrow from the Water Conservation Fund an amount that allows us to meet the expenditures in that year. I apologize. The next year, the red line indicates revenues if we raise rates. Now, we raise rates by 27.5%. Gayla mentioned 30%. That would be if we had those rates in place all year long. We're actually proposing they won't get in place till August 1st of 2010, so we lost 1 month of revenue. Therefore, it's a 27.5% increase, overall revenue increase. Now, note that the red line doesn't match the top of the column, which indicates we're actually borrowing additionally this year from the Water Conservation Fund to make ends meet. Now, we did it in this manner because we discussed with city staff how much could we borrow from the Water Conservation Fund and still be able to accomplish the goals of the Water Conservation Fund. So based on the amount that we could borrow, the remainder then is the rate adjustment that you see here. At the top of the last four columns, you see a little yellow piece. This represents the repayment of the money borrowed from the Water Conservation Fund that we're going to make over the next 5 years, so that we pay the money back over a five-year period. Going forward, then, we have one more 2% increase in that third year. So essentially, that was just an amount that we needed to make the financial plan work. So we borrowed, we maximized our borrowing from the Water Conservation Fund in 2011. The rate increase then helped us finish off what we needed for that year. And then going forward, the red line, which is the revenues from the higher rates, matched the top of the columns, plus puts a little bit back as reserves into our water fund. So this is essentially our financial plan, raise rates by 27.5% and then another 2% in 2012. Now, designing our proposed rates going forward, we looked at what the current rate structure is, and there basically consists of these two components. We have a fixed charge component where we charge customers $6.75 per month as a flat charge for each account. And the revenue that's generated from those fixed charges is about 22% of the total revenue that we receive from rates into the water fund. We also have a variable charge component. As I mentioned previously, we established a four-block water conservation rate structure for residential customers in 2005. And then all other customers are charged a uniform charge, which essentially means that we're charging so many dollars per 100 cubic feet for whatever consumption that you use. Our proposed rates, in the top of this slide, should read proposed water rate structure. We're proposing to develop fixed charges that increase with meter size. What we're going to do is recognize American Water Works Association methodology and meter capacity ratios such that we determine fixed charges relative to a 3/4-inch meter size. Now, the concept behind this is that the cost to supply water at the rate and quantity demanded by higher, larger meter sizes is more expensive than for smaller meter sizes, and therefore they should bear a greater proportion of the costs related to capacity. We're also going to set the charges to recover 25% of the revenue that we receive into the fund, and this follows California Urban Water Conservation Council practice for water conservation rates, as well as a 25% is really being the state average for how much money is received from fixed charges. Under our variable rate charge or volume charge, we're proposing to keep the four-block rate structure for residential customers. This was actually tailored to the city of Grover Beach, and I believe it's still effective based on the consumption characteristics that I saw from the information provided by the city. Now, we're also proposing to make a change for landscape customers. So those customers that have a landscape meter, we're proposing to raise that price to the third block price for residential customers. Now, the concept here is that most of the outdoor use for residential customers occurs in the third block. So the price that we charge for water in that third block is essentially the same use that landscape customers want. So any outdoor use then will be charged at that third block price. Now, this also reflects that landscape water use places higher demands on the system due to the parks, irrigation system, golf courses, lawn sprinkling, et cetera. and because it places higher demands, it should be a higher price than the average cost of the water. So essentially the numbers look like this. These are the proposed fixed charges. On the left-hand side, you'll see meter size. They escalate from 5/8 inch all the way up to 4 inch. This represents the current meters that are, range of meters that are with the city of Grover Beach. The next column is the existing rates. Currently, they're $6.75 regardless of what meter size that you have. The next year, we're proposing that 5/8 and 3/4 inch meter be the same charge, $8.70, and this is because most single-family homes have either a 5/8 or 3/4 inch meter size, and there's somewhat very little differential between. We don't want to say that there's a differential between single-family homes. We want to say that they either have 5/8, 3/4, and therefore supplying that service. Now, as you can see, as we go up to higher meter sizes, those charges increase from $8.70 all the way up to $144.70, reflecting the American Water Works Association meter capacity ratios. Then, as we go to the next year, fiscal year 2011-12, that's a 2% increase, essentially, over the charges that are shown for 2010-11, that 2% coming from the Water Fund Financial Plan that I mentioned previously. And then the rates stay essentially the same for the next couple of years. For our volume charges, we currently recognize three classifications. On the left-hand side, you'll see where it says classification. We have residential, landscape, and all other customers. Under residential, you see the four-block structure that we've been discussing tonight. This was essentially established in the 2005 study. So the first block is the 0 to 12, 100 cubic feet consumption per bi-month, and that's currently charged at $2.28. And that escalates up to $2.76 for the fourth block, which is the over 42 or consumption per bi-month. Now, as we move down for landscape customers, they're currently being charged $2.41 per 100 cubic feet, as is all other customers. Now, as I mentioned about landscape, as we move to the next year, the landscape price, the $3.45, then becomes the same price we charge in the third block for residential customers at $3.45, and this is to reflect that that's mostly outdoor water consumption. We're charging single-family homes that price, so we should charge other landscape customers a similar price for that outdoor water use. Then moving across the next year, that reflects a 2% increase over the previous year, and that essentially remains the same for the next couple of years. Now, I also want to present what this means as far as the average or typical bill to a single-family home in the city of Grover Beach. The average, as Gayla mentioned, is 2,200 cubic feet per bi-month. So if we were to take that consumption and run it through the rate schedules for other agencies within San Luis Obispo County, we would have the range of water bills that are shown in this graph. Essentially, the red column shown here is the city of Grover Beach. Prior to the rate increase, the gold cap represents the additional amount that would occur with the August 1st, 2010 rate adjustment. So the total then shows we're just below, actually we're in the lower half of the range of the bills that are shown here. So this indicates to me that even with the increase, I believe the water bill for a single-family home is within reason as compared to your other neighbors and cities. So with that, if I can answer any questions, I'll be happy to do so.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Tuckfield. Questions? Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. That was very thorough. I appreciate that because the study was a little hard for me to kind of wrap my head around. Can you give me an example of who would have like a 4-inch meter?
Those would be large water users. I would assume there's some either industrial or large commercial customer.
There's very few.
There is very few, but there obviously must be one. Or I wouldn't have it in there. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so then how about like a, I mean, because these are people who are going to see a large increase in their water bill.
Yes.
So maybe like a 1 1/2 inch meter?
A duplex, not a duplex, but a multifamily unit complex might have a 1 1/2 inch meter.
Okay. So like
actually,
apartment
yes.
building possibly?
Gayla, I actually believe there are some large single-family homes that have a 1 1/2 inch meter.
I think that's correct, but there's very few.
Really?
Okay, so, I mean, because they're going to see a significant increase. Okay. Okay, that's what I. That was very interesting. And then have all the meters in our city been replaced?
Yes.
From 05?
Yes.
Okay. I think those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols?
No.
Councilmember Myers?
I'm satisfied with the report. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Where to begin? I'm just in reading the staff report, I think we had talked about that you had estimated the Lopez operation maintenance cost would not exceed $379,300 in FY09, but it looks like that number has nearly doubled.
That's correct.
And what do you attribute that to? I mean, I'm sitting here, and you gave us a projection, and it's almost doubled. So,
yes, the numbers that are included in the report reflect the actual forecast as provided by the county. So those numbers are not mine. They're essentially the county's numbers. So previously in the 2005 study, I also received those numbers from the county. They were included then. The county has essentially adjusted those numbers to the levels they are now. And so I'm incorporating those into the study. So they were provided by the county.
Okay. And then I know I saw one of the assumptions was did I see something like 8 units?
Yes.
Was that per year or
annually? Yes.
Annually.
So
I mean, how do we reconcile that with very little development going on in the state of this economy now?
Well, what we're let's put it this way: the average bill is like $80, so 8 times 80 times 6 bills a year, like $4,000. Not a whole lot of money being generated from those 8 units annually. So it was more or less based on looking at the history of the number of customers that did connect to the water system, and that average was about 8. So in order to keep up with the averages, I projected 8 going forward.
Okay. And I think Councilmember Wright asked a really good question regarding 4-inch meters or even the larger meters. I think that would be some information that would be worthy of us having. Who has the larger meters and who are going to see a significant increase? Because if it's commercial or industrial users, I mean, is that going to be a deterrent if we keep saying economic development is our number one priority? So I think that's something that I'd be interested in seeing down the road. Let me ask you, I'm trying to, and I think I have an idea of what's the cause of this, but I wanted to just kind of have you reiterate these costs, the ongoing operation and maintenance costs. Is Lopez Zone 3 the management of that, the main culprit?
I can tell you that if we reduced the Lopez cost to what they were 3 years ago, we would probably not need a rate increase.
Okay. I'll come back to that later. Have we been able to determine when we adopted the tiered water rates several years ago? I know that one of the things that was talked about was that, you know, it's going to be great from a conservation end, but it's going to reduce revenues as people hopefully get on board and start using less money, less water, paying less. Do we have any documentation or any evidence that that has occurred or is occurring?
With regards to the water users themselves, because we had such a loss with the old meters and then implementing the new meters and putting them in to where we were actually recouping our costs as we should have been, because we had a lot of dead meters in the ground that were not giving us any read at all, it would be really hard to come up with that number because there were so many variables in there.
Okay. Well, obviously, and I will say thank you for the slide that's actually still up on the board. I think that gives me a little consolation. However, I'm still very troubled that we are considering a rate adjustment, and I understand all the valid reasons to do it, but given a struggling economy, so I certainly will be concerned if we choose to go forward. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
I do have one question. The chart you have on the board is a comparison of single-family residential bimonthly rates. the largest increase is going to be in the commercial area. Do we have any comparison on where we stand with the commercial customers?
No. typically, my experience has been most people are concerned with the single-family customers. While you'll see that the fixed charge will increase, say, from $870 all the way up to $144 per month, the majority of the bill for commercial customers is related to the volume charge. So while I guess that's what that says is then the bill is quite large then for commercial industrial customers. So the fixed charge isn't quite so significant as their total overall bill would be, if that helps explain.
Other cities in the county are also on the tiered rates based on meter size. I received a copy of Arroyo Grande's study that Mr. Tuckfield did a year or so ago, and they have meter sizes out to 8 inches with a tiered rate.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And, when I'm still kind of scratching my head, you were saying most residential or single-family homes have a 5/8 or 3/4 inch meter. Can we document that? Because I'm wondering if there are some that went from 3/4 to 1 inch because of sprinkler requirements and some other things, and I want to make sure there's no compounding effect.
I'm unsure as to the number, but I know most of the ones that I've gone in and looked at the system on are 3/4 on the most part.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay.
I now have a question.
You have a question, Councilmember Myers?
Yeah. The mayor brought this to mind. The commercial rate charge, I assume, is classified under all other. Is that?
That's correct.
So they pretty well have a flat rate of about $3 per cubic whatever it is.
Cubic feet, correct.
So if they have a high volume of use, the service charge is going to be rather minimal for a big user of water, isn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
So my thought is maybe the mayor's concern about that higher rate might be misplaced if the big charge is the volume use anyway. And they got a fair break on the volume use out of your chart, I suppose.
That's correct. And I think if Gayla could lend some information on this too, I would say the majority of the non-residential customers have a landscape meter installed. So the consumption then is separated from what's used in the building versus what's used outdoors. So it helps to equate that back to the same price as residential pays.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to open this up to the public. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the council, this item before the council? Seeing that, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to the council. So, is there any other questions, any other discussion?
Well, I have some discussion.
Okay.
I'm not happy about a rate increase, mainly because I feel that a good part of this is we have no control over it because of Zone 3. And I noticed that our partners in Zone 3, their rates are higher than ours, and probably for this reason. So that is a concern of mine. It's something that I know that when I sat on Zone 3, it was a concern then, and I know it has been for our current representative on that board now. So we really need to get a handle on that somehow. Those are just runaway costs. I don't know.
No,
we have the county who really, they don't have a stake in this, I don't think. They just tell us it's going to cost this and this and this, and we have to foot the bill, and now it's really becoming a real problem, obviously. And now, our ratepayers, us, you, me, we all have to pay that. So that's a problem. However, we can't continue on like this as well. So I don't want to pay more for my water bill, and I don't want my neighbors to either, but it looks like we're at least in the ballpark, and we still are less than our counterparts in Zone 3. So having said that, I'm just not happy about this at all. So that's what I have to say about this at this point in time.
Okay.
Nothing
no,
very problematic, but that's it.
Those are excellent comments, and I agree with everyone that you made. So is there anyone else? Okay. And thank you for pointing it out, Councilmember Myers. I just wanted to make sure that whatever decision that is made, not only by us and by the voters, is informed. And so, you know, I don't like going into things blindly. So when I ask for additional information stating that it may, there's a prospect, I think it's trying to do the due diligence. I will say I agree completely with you on this issue of Zone 3 and the spiraling costs that are out of control. And I think that we certainly need to put our heads together with our neighboring jurisdictions and find a way to try and get out in front of this. I'm not quite sure what that looks like, but I know that there's been an effort to try and get some emergency water from the State Water Project, but I think the bigger issue really is how do we get control of long-term water costs so that we can have some control over our destiny, because this is it's outrageous to look at the number that was projected and then to look at the actual cost. And just and so as we go forward, what I would hope that staff and Mr. Tofu would provide to us is, and I'm sure you're all confident and all positive thinkers, you know, but the fact of the matter is the timing on this probably couldn't be a whole lot worse. So what if the voters choose not to support this or to file a protest? What is there an alternative plan, or is this pretty much it? So how would we address that? And then going forward, will there be some effort in how do we inform and educate the public? Because I think it's certainly pretty clear to a majority of us sitting up here that the cost for the ongoing maintenance and operation of Zone 3 and Lopez are having a profound effect on our system. So I don't know, City Manager, have you given that any thought?
There are two thoughts. One on the option, and the second as to possibly how to go forward with the Zone 3. First on the option, the one option that may be available is almost as difficult, but it is still an option. Would be to obviously continue to borrow funds from the Water Conservation Fund to actually meet the obligations that we have, both budgetary and Lopez, and then to extend the repayment of those funds for a extended period of time. What that may do is drop your actual voter actual rate increase a bit and stretch it out over a longer period of time. But you have to remember the downside of that is it would deplete the Water Conservation mm-hmm. Fund in terms of having dollars available for those kinds of efforts, and you would be increasing the debt load, obviously, on the water fund in doing that, and it would take you longer to catch up. The other is the certainly it's something that I know that the mayor has discussed from time to time with other two mayors, Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande, but I think what we ought to do is maybe request a formal meeting amongst municipal members of Zone 3 to discuss whatever kind of alternatives may be available to try and deal with the county in getting a better handle on controlling these costs.
Absolutely. Thank you, City Manager.
I have to agree with that, and I think we do need to get together with the neighboring communities. This is getting out of hand, and we really don't have control over it. There's not much we can do. I think we're very fortunate that our city rates, residential rates anyway, are still as low as they are. I think the people within this community can feel grateful for that. We have done everything we can, and I know Councilman Myers is deeply involved with Zone 3 and has been a great help in that respect. But I think we really do have to see if there isn't something we can do as a full body with everybody.
Okay. Yeah, I've been sort of proposing that silently to myself, that we are to form a group amongst our local citizens and explore the issues. It'd be very, very complicated because of the ownership of the property and how it was built and the fact that the Fed's in there now with their trying to protect the animal life, fish life, and
right.
Causing a whole lot of that cost, maybe half or more of the increases is directed toward the fish and game and their efforts to protect the steelhead and the counter things that this. The Lopez Waterworks has to do to adjust to what the feds are asking for. So that's a real issue right now.
Okay. If there's no additional discussion, someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I would move staff recommendation myself. I think they've done an excellent job. I firmly believe that. Enterprise activities such as the waterworks are to be paid by the users and that the city shouldn't be taking money from other people to pay for water users, and the users should have to pay for it. I'm going to hurt a bit because I have a large yard and use a lot of waters, but I still think we ought to raise a go with staff recommendation.
Okay. I will second the motion, and I'll second your comments, too. I agree with that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second, and just for everyone who does not have an agenda, it is to that the council conduct a public hearing and provide staff with direction to conduct a Proposition 218 hearing for proposed new water rates as listed in the water rate study. So I suspect that this item would come back to the council, and is that correct? And any idea on the timing of that, City Manager?
I have it. You have an attachment to the proposed notice of public hearing, which we will get out this week. The date of the hearing would be Monday, June 21st.
Very good. I asked that for the public so they know. Thank you.
There's a 45-day waiting period once we submit.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for doing what I should have done. Read that out to
okay.
the public as well.
So there is a motion and a second. This is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. And then I would ask my colleagues that we give the staff direction. And that direction, there's two items to that is when they come back with public hearing that there be a brief discussion of alternatives or options should the 218 measure not be successful, how we would address that. And then the other is to make contact with other municipal members of Zone 3 for a joint meeting. I know there are some complexities, as you properly pointed out, but it is time. We need to have that discussion, and we need to do it in a formal meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
I think
just for information, some of the other cities are thinking about the same thing. I've talked to some of the representatives from time to time, and it's on their agenda as well.
Okay. So I think we have consensus on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, staff. Let's go to our consent agenda. This is, I believe we have... consent is typically held for routine items taken as a group, typically, and we have four items on consent tonight. The first is the Treasury report for the period of April 14th to 29th, 2010. The second is minutes of a City Council meeting of November 16th. The third is the second reading and adoption of an ordinance to amend the purse formula for sworn members of the Grover Beach Police Officers Association. And then the final is, I believe, FY fiscal year 09-10 Ramona specific plan phase improvements, and that's accepting of those improvements, City Manager. Do any members of the council want to pull any item from consent?
No.
And I don't have any requests from the public to speak on any of those items. So if no one has any discussion, I will accept a motion on consent.
I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as proposed.
I'm a second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, moving on, we have no items under regular business this evening, and we also have no items that were pulled from the consent agenda. And we're actually making really good time. So, council committee reports. Councilmember Bright, do you have anything you want to report this evening?
Well, I did, and I, in my tither to get, anyway, I left my notes at home. So, off the top of my head, I had an EVC meeting where our mayor was honored with an award for his years of service. The only good tidbit of information that I can remember was that the airport usage was up March to March. I believe they said 9%. So, and the BIDs, or they'd like to get the BIDs all together under one roof, kind of, under the county tourism council. No, I can't even think of the name of it. All right. Never mind. Anywho, it was a great meeting, and I've left my notes behind, so maybe I can bring those another time. And
that sounds good.
So thank you.
Okay. Anything going on with the airport pollution control district?
We have our meeting the third Wednesday of this month. So.
Okay. No, very good. Councilmember Myers.
Yes, I could report on the Water Resource Advisory Committee meeting. We had on April the 7th, we had an all-day meeting, and it primarily concerned, as you might expect, water. The first part of the meeting was a morning meeting with a presentation for a master water plan workshop. That that workshop was led by the Corolla Engineering group, who was retained to actually develop the master water plan. And just to briefly to give you an idea of the scope of what's happening here, because it is a complete rework of the 1995 water plan, which has been around a long time. The scope of the work that the Corolla reported on that all morning session was as follows. They were retained to do a study that would examine and optimize existing water and resources management in the county. Part of that would be a stakeholder review, workshops, and meetings, and that's underway as we speak, sort of. They would do a water demand analysis of urban, rural, agricultural, and environmental uses, and that's pretty important because we don't have a real good water demand analysis now with the old report, the old management plan. They would develop a water resources management strategy, and that's very important because we don't really have one right now, and that's being done by studying what all the various users are actually using and what the capacity of the groundwater, the various water supplies are. And then they're to prioritize a recommendation, then prepare the master water plan. This is getting a little long, but it's kind of important to know this. Under the product description, the task would be they'd be lead support role in these various items: refine scope, goals, and objectives of the water plan, describe water resource management in the county, do a water resources analysis, that's where the water's coming from, how much we got, the supply, the reserves, the drafts, the overdrafts, etc. Define the relationship to master water plan to other related documents, which would be the agriculture open space planned under study and about ready to be adopted, and various other things. Then they got to do an administrative draft for the board of supervisors to look at. And provide a framework for maintaining and updating the master water plan, and then do the SECPA compliance study. That's a real broad scope of things. If you look at the total scope, it's 89 pages, so it's gets pretty involved. So that was the morning session, and it was very 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 informative session, and I walk away with my head spinning trying to understand it all. But luckily, these stuff is all on the website, so if anybody here wants to really spend the time, you can walk away with a spit head as well. The next thing I'd report on is there was a resource management annual summary report submitted that's drafted every year to be presented to the Board of Supervisors, actually. That pretty much does annually what this big master water plan is doing. I could read this, but it's been a long time, but it's pretty extensive what this report is, and that annual management report would be a good thing to review as we go forward with a water management plan. If we're going to get involved with our other cities to do this thing, we ought to start accumulating these documents and have them as a package. And I wouldn't mind sort of taking the lead on that if we decide to. That's important because I know where all the assets are buried on the websites. I had something else to talk about. What was it? There's a Paso Robles groundwater basin study which is being conducted also, and which the RAC is reviewing. And that's important because we haven't had real groundwater basin studies up to now anywhere, including Paso Robles, including the groundwater basins that we're setting under too. So some information of this is this county is actually doing a very good job in trying to get our water resources identified, cataloged, determined, and a plan in place. And if we'll, I think, bear with them on that one, maybe you don't want to bear with them on Lopez, on Zone 3, but bear with them on that, we'll finally have something that's very, very workable. And I'll just remind you that if you want to know what that, I'll find it here somewhere. The website that you might go to, it's on that handout I gave you some time ago, but it's all this stuff is at www.slocountywater.org. And if you'll just drill down through there, you can find all this information that I keep getting that's available. And again, the county is doing a real good job of indexing this stuff and maintaining it on site. So you can always go there and find out any answers if you got the time.
Very good. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols, anything?
Very briefly, our sanitation plant continues to operate effectively. You should all be happy.
We are.
But I also want to comment on the 10-year plan to end homelessness. We're moving ahead on that, and the Clap Road Initiative task team that I am on, which is working on the South County. And there is progress being made, and thanks to Mayor Pro Tem and Pismo, Shelley is doing a very good job, along with Peter and Betsy. We have tried to keep that program on track and are doing so. And I think we're making very good progress. We're not going to take this out to the public yet. The consultants that they hired keep wanting to move this out to get public approval, and we keep telling them, you haven't done anything yet. You know, 2 years ago, you called together that organization, and a lot was accomplished at that time, and they really haven't got anything good to report yet. Progress is being made. We are getting working on property facilities and so forth, but we don't have enough yet to go to the public to get their support on this. But it is moving forward, and I want you to know that.
Great, thank you. And can you thank everyone for their time and commitment to the cause, and just keep us informed to let us know what we can do to assist.
Yeah.
And thank you for your service on that that very worthy committee and task team. I'll just quickly go through the Slocog board recently, I think, had approved about $500,000 for planning and environmental studies to try and move projects along. And I know that they originally had told staff there would be a call for projects. I think that is a very good funding source that could be used for the environmental review of the train depot expansion. And I know that Mr. Buckingham hopefully has been in touch with Slocog staff, because we want to make sure that when there is a call for projects that we that the city gets an application in. The other thing that I wanted to report is that I believe we are finally now moving forward with the Fire and Emergency Services Oversight Committee, and I believe the next meeting is May 14, 2010, at which time we will have three documents for consideration for the committee, the MOU, a memorandum of understanding.
The budget for the proposed entity, as well as the MOU for labor negotiations and the JPA agreement itself.
Very good. And so the Fire Oversight Committee will review those documents and then make a recommendation. And the idea is that it would then be taken to the three participating members, the Oceano Community Services District, the City of Grover Beach, and Aurora Grande. So I would suspect that we would see an item come before this council in June.
Yes.
Okay. And I believe the still with a date of July 1 for this to go into effect. We're still confident with that date, City Manager?
The only thing, yes, it'll be June, as soon after July 1st as we can get everybody on payroll, so with
okay.
The new district.
Oh, very good. And that's all I have to report this evening. And I'll wait till the City Manager has some questions, but I'll wait till we get there. There are no City Council member items this evening. Any additional council communications?
I have one I'd just like to communicate. Maybe we all already know about it, but this morning's paper announced that on Tuesday, tomorrow, the Board of Supervisors is considering a resolution asking the governor to move the special election date for the vacant state senator seat so it coincides with November general election, rather than having it come up in June and costing the taxpayers of this county $1 million or so. I don't know what we can do about it as a city council, but we might think about joining with the county in a resolution or a letter, or authorize maybe the mayor to send a letter that this county has a consensus that that ought to be done.
Okay.
If that could, something that's the mayor would be considered, I would like to push it as an item.
That's a really good idea. Is there
we
have consensus to place that maybe on agenda or with direction for staff to prepare a letter for my signature? We're okay with that?
Yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely.
Very good. Thank you for bringing that up, Councilmember Myers.
Okay.
One thing I do want to bring up is I know that my wife is participating in the Relay for Life in June, and this past weekend, I guess it was Paint the Town Purple. So there were purple ribbons and bows along the Grand Avenue corridor in both the city of Grover Beach and Aurora Grande. And she enlisted my help on Sunday to help go take them down. And she's gotten to a point where I don't know if she likes walking, just walking with me, because when I'm walking through the city, I don't do a very good job putting my blinders on. So here's where I'm going with this. I know with the recent rains, we have some situations where there were plants that had been growing through the cracks. There were other various items of, let's say, trash and other that I was hired to take down the purple ribbons, and I ended up starting to do city cleanups. So I'd like to investigate, or not investigate, have a cleanup Grover Beach Day with a team of volunteers. Hopefully we can get someone from the chamber to get involved. And I don't know what the staff, if there's a maintenance schedule, but given the limited resources, given the fact that we are trying to really drive home the point of pride in our community and getting folks to come. And I see a lot of folks walking Grand Avenue these days. So trying to organize that and looking at the possible dates of June 12th or 19th. And so the only reason I'm not committing to one is I know that Cal Poly and some others have graduations, and so I haven't had a chance to check the calendar. So I hope that if we are able to put together an organization, that there will be folks not only sitting up here, but folks who are watching this at home, and anyone who's been looking for an opportunity to get involved will volunteer some time, and maybe it would be just a Saturday morning for a few hours. So I think that would be something that we can all take some pride in. I know everybody's really busy, but it's really important.
I think it's a good idea. I know they do it in Santa Margarita. They just had theirs.
Okay.
And I participated there. I would certainly participate in our town as well.
Great.
I'd like to ask the mayor to sort of extend his thought a little bit, if he'd permit me to do that.
Sure.
I like the idea of a public cleanup, beach cleanups, and I do them when they show up. And I clean the sidewalks in my neighborhood. When I walk the block, I clean the whole block, as I walk the block about three times a week. And I've seen other cities where the merchants and the homeowners are asked to clean their space in front of their house, in front of their building. And if we can just get the general public to do that, we all benefit. The merchants benefit because their space is clean and they don't have to wait for the city to get there. Mm-hmm. So we can start some kind of education program or request program to all the property owners to clean the space in front of their buildings. And if you get that started, you'll see they'll walk two or three doors down because they want it to be clean. It works. I think we have the kind of city and people that would do that if they're just reminded that that's something that we could all do together and better our city.
Okay, very good. I will keep everyone informed on the status of that. Okay. City Manager, I guess you have report and comments, and this is item number 9 on the agenda for anyone following along. And this is a status report regarding the Oak Park Undergrounding Project and the train station expansion project. City Manager Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As the mayor has indicated, this is actually a follow-up to the request by the mayor and the council for an update on these two projects from the request was made at the last meeting. As far as the Oak Park Undergrounding Project is concerned, by way of background, so you have some idea of what the actual time frame was, the district was actually authorized by the City Council by resolution back in 2002. You have to form a district in order to be able, as the council is so aware, to use Rule 20A funds made available through PG&E to be able to underground overhead utilities. And the district that was put in place at that time was to underground lines along North Oak Park Boulevard between Ramona and Atlantic City. And all total, there are about 30 parcels that are actually involved in that undergrounding effort. The work was to be completed, coordinated, and completed by the impacted utilities. As the council is aware, the project was delayed by PG&E for a number of years due to funding and scheduling issues, largely due to the city's continual pressure on the utilities. They finally got that underway in 2009. And the AT&T actually was the lead with the consent of PG&E. Most of the work on the undergrounding was completed by January of this year. In late in the project, city staff learned that prior to the actual physical undergrounding of the overhead lines, the private electrical panels serving the private customers had to be converted, and that the responsibility for informing those customers of that conversion was actually a city responsibility. Prior to that time, we had actually thought that that was part of PG&E or AT&T's role in coordinating the project as a whole.
I will mention that the conversion, there is a $1,500 credit available to those private property owners for the conversion. Staff is now in the process of notifying the property owners by mail of the requirement and also of the procedure for seeking reimbursement. We expect these notices will go out within the following week, and the notices will also include a list of local electrical contractors that are qualified to be able to perform this work with the undergrounding. And unfortunately, the final undergrounding will need to wait until the panels are converted and able to accept the undergrounding lines. That's the status of the undergrounding project.
So when are these folks going to be notified?
This next week, Greg, correct? That letter's going out this next week.
Okay.
I have a question. I know you want to ask now or wait.
No, ask your question.
On this $1,500 credit that each is entitled to, what portion of the cost does that cover?
That covers the conversion of the box and I believe the lateral line, so that essentially it's all prepared and ready to accept the PG&E undergrounding final undergrounding when it takes place.
That doesn't answer my question. Maybe I didn't make my question clear. If it's going to cost each homeowner, how much is it going to cost them? That $1,500, is that $1,500 of a cost that may be $5,000 or $50,000? Well, $1,500 might mean nothing, or it might cover the whole thing.
It's my understanding that in most cases it'll cover the whole thing.
They don't know because no one's gone out and given them an estimate. Correct.
Wouldn't it make sense to? I don't know that it's the city's position, but to have somebody contact those homeowners involved. We know who the electrical contractors are that can accomplish this job and put that together as a package deal so that maybe it would cover the entire cost, the $1,500. Therefore, the homeowners would not be out any expense and we could get it done without any problem at all and get it done much more quickly and more efficiently. Is that possible?
I believe it is.
Welcome to the city, Mr. Ray. You have
Mr. Ray.
Some information you'd like to add?
Yeah.
I think you're on.
Am I on?
Yes.
I think
good
there
evening,
you Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem, and Council. We are considering both alternatives at staff level. One alternative is hopefully the easiest alternative. If all of the electrical panels and the undergrounding requirements to get to the new underground conduit are simple, then hopefully we can determine that each one of them can be done for under the $1,500 reimbursement, and you know maybe we can move forward quickly. But we're going to analyze that as well as the other alternative of trying to put together a overall program and determining if the city could, in fact, receive the reimbursement from PG&E to do that. So we'll look at both, and you know, hopefully the simple process will work, but we'll be prepared for both.
Good. Thank good.
That.
Very good.
Good thinking.
Thank you for that, and I just want to reemphasize, and I know you have another report. This was an undergrounding district that was formed probably within the first 3 months that I was on this council, 7 years ago. And I understand the city manager pointed out that staff discovered this later in the process. However, work has been done, and this really needs to be taken care of. And I hope I know that we're all busy. I believe there needs to be some urgency because, you know, it's, and I'll just say it, it's frustrating to say the least to continue to drive up and down Oak Park to know that the holes are there and that we need to find a way to facilitate this and do it and get it done. So I don't know if that had been conveyed to Mr. Ray or whatnot, but we really need to get this done because, as we all know, I understand the City of San Luis Obispo tomorrow night is moving forward on a major project on 227. That includes themselves and the county. And if they start to take up all the resources, then we're going to be stuck in another holding pattern. So I just wanted to put that out there. So, City Manager.
The other item that you had requested a report on is the train station expansion project. And as the council is aware, the project will do a number of things. It will expand the existing facility to the south. It will relocate the bus facility to the same side as the train depot. It will expand the parking. It will also provide for a small commercial building. To date, we've entered into an MOU with the county to take the lead on that particular project. Also have completed a concept plan and also did the initial biological constraints work with the funding we had available. In the budget for the coming year, the CIP does contain a total of $65,000 of mostly local resources that could be made available to complete the environmental work. But as noted, we are also hoping that SOCOG will be able to assist us with either augmenting that or paying a large share of the environmental work, and we are going to proceed with the application as soon as the call for projects is available.
Okay. And, Bob, has there been any proposals from professional firms to kind of give us an idea of how much it would take to conduct environmental?
Bruce, do you have any thoughts on that?
Mayor, members of the council, Bruce Buckingham, Community Development Director. Yeah, we did go out and solicit one proposal just to get a litmus test, if you will, for the cost of preparing either a mitigated neg deck or a focused DIR. So we do have some cost, and that's what the budget was based on at this point.
So it's a $65,000 in line?
Yeah.
In the ballpark?
Yeah, plus, you know, trying to factor in revisions, probably need minor revisions to the site plan based on some Caltrans comments, as you recall. So we're hoping that would cover completing the project and getting it to the council.
Have we not finalized the site plan?
Yes, to the extent that the final comments we received from Caltrans regarding driveways and trying to combine that. So very minor change, but we'll want to take care of that. So what we bring forward to the council obviously reflects the project that the council would like to approve with the proper environmental documentation.
So you do anticipate bringing that plan back to the council to see the final plan once you've incorporated to Caltrans comments? Or
correct.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. City Manager.
That concludes my reports for this evening.
Great. Thank you. Okay. City Attorney, this is item number 10. This is a discussion regarding potential ballot measure to change the mayoral term. So, City Attorney.
Honorable Mayor and members of the council, last meeting, the City Council directed us to look at the possibility or bring information back with regard to potentially increasing the mayoral term from 2 years to 4 years. In 2006, when this went on the ballot to establish the strong, the independent mayor form of council, the voters also received two ballots, one for a two-year term and one for a four-year term. The two-year term was succeeded by a 68.8% margin. The four-year term was defeated by a 70.5% margin. The process to, if the council chooses to put it on the ballot, the process would be to put it again to the voters for a majority vote, either direction, up or down, as to whether a four-year term is what they desire or not. But it is a matter that is for the voters to decide. It would go into effect at the end of the current mayoral term, which I believe is November of 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct? No, couldn't be, could it?
No. The current term
will end
in December of this year.
December of this year, okay. Well, it wouldn't be on the ballot until November of 2010. So, in any event, it does have to be voted upon, and might want to consider also whether council wanted to put on the term limits that are currently in effect, which currently it's a 2-year consecutive term for the mayor and council, for that matter, both. So if you choose to do this, you might want to put both of them on the ballot, or you might do one or the other.
Okay. And either way, it goes to a vote of the people, correct?
That's correct. It has to be by a vote of the people.
Because as I understand, there was a call today. Someone voiced in there. Ms. MacGyver called to voice her objection to change the mayoral term without going to the voters, and that is not the intent.
The council does not have the power to do that without a vote of the
citizens. Great. Thank you for that clarification. Okay. Anything else on that? Okay. Any questions? Any discussion? Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yes. I would like very much to see us put it on the ballot. I personally feel that we ask the voters to change the mayoral term from 2 years to 4 years. I don't think we want to put anything else on the ballot. I don't think we want to ask for term limits, to change or do away with term limits. I think from a psychological standpoint, I think that's asking too much of the voters. They just voted 2 years ago to elect a mayor, and they decided at that time, because they had an option, either go for 2 years or 4 years. And I can understand why, having talked to a lot of people in the community, why they went for 2 years. I've had a lot of explanations, but I understand why they did it. I personally believe that we can educate the public, the residents of this community, that the mayor, to be effective, needs more than 2 years per term. I think we're in a good position right now. I think we've had a very effective elected mayor. I think he is extremely popular with the residents of this community. And if we ever had a good opportunity to convince them that a 4-year term is better than a 2-year term, I think now is probably the time to do it, as good a time as any. And I think asking them about term limits, now is not the time to do that. In addition, there has been a lot of talk statewide about term limits. And I believe that at a future date, not this coming November, but at a future date, I honestly believe there is going to be a move within the state to eliminate that term limit situation. A lot of people very unhappy with that are beginning to recognize that it looks like the state is being run by the administrative people in Sacramento, because they've been there for 15 or 20 years, and the people that we elect are brand new and don't have a real strong handle on what's going on, and the administrators up in Sacramento are kind of running the state. So I think that's going to come up at a future election, and I think that would be the time that we could put it on the local ballot. Right now, I think we ought to put our emphasis on changing the term for the mayor. I think the mayor needs 4 years. In addition to what he can accomplish, if he has to run for office every 2 years, he'll spend 1 year trying to get things organized and get programs together and on the ballot and so forth. Or not on the ballot, but before the public and before the council. And then he has to spend his second year worrying about running for office again. So that takes away a lot of effect of a mayor when he has a 2-year term. I have talked to the mayor of San Luis Obispo. I've talked to the mayor of Morro Bay. And I've talked to the mayor of Pismo Beach, who all serve 2-year terms. They are all very unhappy with that and believe it's not fair to the mayor to have to run for office every 2 years. I think that's it. I'll get off my soapbox.
Okay. Anyone else have any comments?
I don't know. I just want to voice my 100% support of what Mr. Nichols has said. I agree with 99% of it, and I don't agree with much, 99% across the board. So we are to do 2 4-year terms. And I also believe he's psychologically right that we don't want to put term limits on the board to now. We ought to focus on one thing that's really important, and that's getting 2 terms for the mayor at 4 years. Or at least get 4 years, which would be 2 terms, believe it alone.
Okay. Councilmember Bright, do you have anything?
Well, I do, of course. I can't let these two have a say in me not saying anything, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, women's rights, you know.
That's right. Yes. Actually, I was one of those who voted for a 2-year term, but now that I've been here, I can see that it really is important, I think, for continuity's sake. And to have, I think, 4 years is very important. I think also something else that I think people don't really realize is that a mayor really only has one vote like everyone else. So it's not like the mayor has really any more votes than anybody else. But as far as actually getting things done and being able to carry on, 2 years just really isn't long enough, I don't think. You know, a council member has 4 years, and you can actually carry a project through. Whereas when you have to keep running all the time, it really is a major drain on emotionally, financially, everything else. So I think that it would behoove us to do that. I also voted for the term limits, which now I believe was short-sighted. And for all the reasons that you mentioned, we've seen what a mess it's made of. Well, that's not the only thing, but it has contributed to a big mess in our state capital anyway. But so I would defer to my colleagues here. I don't think it would be a bad thing, but not that I think I'd run for more than any more than I've already done. But I think that I do believe that a 4-year mayoral term really is the best thing for our city anyway. I had one other thing I was going to say, but now I've rambled on so long I've forgotten what it was. So,
okay.
Thank you.
Let me emphasize the point that you brought up that I think is very important, because
and any time we're talking about giving the voters a say, I'm 100% behind that. And just to keep it simple with respect to the numbers, I think Councilmember Bright talked about it. Council members now are allowed 2 4-year terms, total of 8. Then they would have to sit out 2 years and then come back if they so desired. And I believe the mayor is 2 2-year terms or 4 years total. And I don't know if it was just an oversight to not ask that question when this was originally done. I know it was a somewhat controversial, but just from a fairness and equity standpoint, it's certainly something that should be considered. But I think all of us up here would want to make sure that the voters have a say. It is not something on our agenda. And I know there is no formal vote on this tonight.
Direction to staff, however, and I think if I'm hearing correctly, the direction that the council is going is for staff to bring back a ballot resolution language with respect to increasing the term from 2 to 4 years for the mayoral position, and also to eliminate term limits. Am I hearing that? No.
No. Not even mention term limits.
Okay.
Forget it.
The term limits currently are 2 terms, and you want to leave it that way. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. We will do that.
Very good. And just to, we've had enough discussion on that, and when you come back, I will I'm not sure where I sit on this, because this really is about future leaders. It is not about current council members. I want to just make sure we emphasize that to anyone listening here and at home.
Right. It does not go into effect until the next term.
Very good.
That's correct.
Okay.
All righty.
We got through that. We have no closed sessions tonight, so I'm going to adjourn the regular city council meeting, and we're going to take, let's say, a 10-minute break. Let's reconvene. Actually, not 10, but let's reconvene at 8:25.
Okay.
Good enough. Okay, I'm going to call to order a joint city council improvement agency meeting for Monday, May 3rd, 2010. And Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. Public communications. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the city council improvement agency? Seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back. Let's move on to our consent agenda this evening. This is item CCIA1, and this looks like minutes from two meetings. One was November 2nd, 2009, and the other November 16, 2009. Do any members have any discussion on this item?
No.
Okay. I would move that we approve the minutes as submitted.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to improvement agency business. This is item IA1, and this is to authorize the agency to negotiate terms and enter into a development and disposition agreement with Vernon and Associates for construction of an affordable housing project. Mr. Buckingham.
Honorable Chair, members of the board, earlier this year, the city issued a request for proposal, or RFP, to solicit interested parties in partnering with the city's improvement agency for the construction of an affordable housing project. As you recall, the city sold the agency property located at the corner of northwest corner of 10th and Farrell, and the site is about 7,000 square feet and zoned R3. As a result of the RFP, the agency received four proposals. A selection committee reviewed the proposals and determined that the proposal submitted by Vernon and Associates best met the criteria outlined in the RFP. Vernon and Associates is located in Santa Barbara, but they have done work in the city. They most recently had completed a plan unit development project on North 14th Street. Vernon and Associates, as part of their proposal, was proposing to construct a four-unit project to be sold to low-income households. Ultimately, though, the number of three project on the east side of the street north of Brighton.
Okay. I think I know which one that is. Okay. Good. Thank you very much.
Councilmember and Board Member Myers.
Okay. I just have a couple of educational questions for myself, so bear with me. What is the process that produces the loan agreement and the regulatory agreement that we talk about in the RFP? Is who's involved in how is it done? Good.
Best to answer those questions. The loan agreement will be between the city and the developer.
Okay.
Detail exactly the affordability requirements and transfer those through the developer to the eventual owners of the property.
Okay.
And also serves to regulate the affordability of the property for the 45 years. All of those will be put in place at a later date.
Okay. I assume the latter, but I just didn't know the process. I haven't been through this before with the city. So. Then the RFP on the second page seems to be saying that the city will enter into the agreement and that the improvement agency isn't involved in the contract. Is that the way that works?
Actually, it's the improvement agency, it should say.
Oh, does it? Okay. Mm-hmm. That was had me confused, but I'm easily confused. All right, sorry. Thank you.
Councilmember Bright, do you have any?
Yes, please. I just have a couple. How many baths are they proposing? Do you know?
It's a three-bedroom...
I couldn't find it anywhere in here.
And it's important to point out that these were very conceptual. This is part of what we'll do now in the negotiation of the development and disposition agreement.
Okay.
So, you...
Okay, well, if it's not there and you don't know, that's fine. We'll work on it.
I'm not even so sure that detail was
okay.
Part of the proposal.
Okay. Thank you. Then I have a couple other questions within their project specifics. Item number 5, under the project specifics, would they talk about our participation, setbacks, massing, detailing, that the city would grant variances to allow proper unit size and design economy. Can you kind of just explore that a bit for me?
Sure. Yeah, the RFP said that we wanted to try to get up to 4 units. And so, quite frankly, 3 of the 4 proposals did show 4 units. But all 4 of those projects are struggling with getting 4 units on there right now, meeting all of our design development standards. Again, back to the planned unit development standards and minimum lot sizes. So, again, we're going to move forward in this process and work with them in designing a project. And ultimately, that may not be 4 units because we're going to have to be weighing and balancing the development standards of the city and what kind of incentives that we can grant them. If you recall, in the case of Habitat for Humanity, we do have a section in our development code that does allow for incentives for affordable projects. And so those will be the types of things that we will be trying to work out a project that we can approve that just meets the incentives without having to grant variances or changing any development standards.
Well, we wouldn't have written the RFP that way if it wasn't possible, right?
Again, we were encouraging up to 4 because we were encouraging creativity to see if we could get 4.
So it's possible to get 4.
Yes, and we will be
within our standards.
We will work on trying to achieve 4 units, yes.
Okay. I think. All right. Okay. Then item number 9, state or federal affordable housing tax credit qualification administered with the city's help.
There are some programs, especially the HOME program, that we would like to apply for this fall through the county that could end up being some state or federal monies that would come in and be beneficial in helping assist in the financing of the project.
And that would be significant?
Could be.
Could be?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. I think that those are my questions for now. Thank you.
Okay.
I have one more question.
Okay, Councilmember Myers.
We're talking about 4 units. Do we have any concept yet as to how big the 4 units are in terms of bedrooms or square footage or whatever the criteria we were looking at?
Most all the proposals were for 3-bedroom units, somewhere in the range of 1,000 to 1,200 square feet. Mm-hmm. You know, trying to achieve a 3-bedroom unit so you can get a certain income or revenue from the project is optimal.
So we're shooting for families, obviously. I hope we are anyways. Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I don't really have any answers in terms of the questions that you brought up, but very excited about working with the city on the project. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Grant. It's always good to see you. Is there anyone else? I see that I'm bringing it back to the council. And let me just say, I think we need to keep in context that this is, in fact, a partnership between the improvement agency, the city, and the Vernon and Associates. And I think we've all seen the project that Mr. Vernon and Mr. Grant worked on 14th Street. They did a really good job, and I can tell you this is a very qualified team. The other thing that I wanted to clarify here is that the council will be approving the project, and that this is a very tough site. It is a drainage basin. It is not a rectangular site. So there are some physical features that certainly would contribute to the prospects of some exceptions. And I'm, you know, I don't want to go too far. But I do want to make sure that if the council chooses to go forward, that staff understands that this is a joint partnership, and that is why I believe this proposal was written this way. And at the end of the day, we need to find a way to try and facilitate more low-income, affordable housing for single moms, working folks, and things of that nature. So if there are no other questions, any other discussion?
Well, I do have, there is some discussion.
Okay.
Let me put on my Councilmember Peterson hat. She did want to discuss the, there was a mention here about allowing overhead electric phone and cable. Do we want to discuss that now?
Sure.
Okay.
Well let's see, what's your comment?
She's just saying before we agree not to underground, which I guess we're really not there. They're just saying that this budget requires participation from the city on a number of points, and that is one of those points, that we would allow overhead, so not undergrounding.
Okay. Yeah, I would, you know, maybe on second thought that is a premature point to make. I think there will be some negotiations that will have to come back to the council, and I think Councilmember Peterson will be here when we have that discussion.
Okay. Well, so that is a concern of hers. It would be one of mine as well. So that was the concern of hers regarding this proposal.
Okay. Anything else?
No. No comments.
So we will discuss these points when this comes back to the council?
Yeah, I as I understand the process, and staff, feel free to jump in here, you're going to be given direction to negotiate a contract with the successful proposer. And if there is some discussion regarding exceptions or variances, then that would come forward, because I don't see this being a development agreement per se, but you would need to ultimately come back to council and ask for a decision on that.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So,
but
we're
tonight
not
is just to authorize staff to move forward with the agreement now, and I'm sure that Mr. Vernon and his team have put together a proposal with certain items that they've identified to help try and defray costs to make these units affordable at the level that they've spec'd out. So I guess that's something you're going to have to let us know if you get to a point where there is an impasse, and come back to the council with some direction. But tonight is just to give them the authority to start that negotiation to get them on the contract and start moving this project down the road.
Okay.
So with that, is someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
Well, I recommend that this board authorize the agency to negotiate terms and enter into a development and disposition agreement with Vernon and Associates, which is the recommended action anyway.
And I'll second that. If there's no additional discussion, roll call.
Yes.
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 Okay, motion carries. Thank you for the report, and hopefully we'll be successful. Let's move on to item IA2. This is authorization to enter into an agreement for professional services for marketing program with WhizBang. Executive Director Peral.
Yes, Chair and members of the board, as the council will recall, in our economic development strategy, and it was an expressed desire of the council to and board to move with this as quickly as possible. Essentially, WISBANG has responded with both the refinements as requested by the council and the board. Additionally, they have indicated what the costs and tasks would be in the development of initial marketing program that we would like to get kicked off before the end of this fiscal year and then would carry over into the next fiscal year. In addition, we actually asked for some other tangibles. These would include a visual treatment theme for the tagline that could be used in the development of a consistent sign program and the development of visual treatments that would be used in the completion of the design for the website, and also the develop of an 8.5 by 11 marketing brochure targeted at local businesses. Essentially, at the outcome of that discussion, there was a subcommittee that consisted of Chair Scholes and Board Member Peterson, and staff would suggest that the effort be coordinated with that subcommittee and ultimately bringing the plan, once it's completed, back to the council and board for final approval. We also think by using this approach, we may short-circuit the other approach that we had in mind in terms of signage and may be able to get the elements we need for a directional sign program done fairly quickly. As noted in the staff report, there is $12,000 quoted in terms of completing this work. There was also a time frame completed included. And although photography, printing, and illustration are not included in the original quotation, in discussions with WISBANG, they said if those elements are needed, they would not exceed $2,000. Ellen Curtis is available tonight as a principal, and if you have any questions of her, or she can probably do a better job of going overview of the proposal if that's what the board and the council desire. Essentially, the staff's recommendation is to authorize the agency to enter into the agreement with WISBANG to developing a marketing program for the agency and the city. That concludes my report, and I'm available for any questions you might have.
Okay. Any questions of staff?
None here.
Okay. Just a real quick clarification, Bob. So the $12,000 is the estimate, and is it 2 to 3 months?
Yes.
To complete, or it looks like it's 6 to 8 weeks to do the marketing plan,
right,
and then the visual treatment. So I don't know. Let me open this up to the public and let Ms. Curtis come up. You've been sitting there patiently on that. We ought to give you an opportunity.
very helpful. Thanks, Mayor, Council Member, staff. Sure, sorry. So the timeline, a lot of these tasks can run concurrently on parallel paths, as we like to say. The foundation for all marketing is the plan, and the plan is really the most important piece. And once we have that in place, then it's actually just executing the plan. So the longest time frame is wrapping our arms around everything that you have currently going so we can audit that and put that within the plan, and then looking at what other additional programs we want to add into the plan. And, of course, we balance that with what the budget you have to run those programs. So then we'll have to make the tough decisions, you know, which programs moving forward and which not. So that's where that 6 to 8 weeks. But as far as signage, creative development, that moves more on a quicker pace, and we can get that going right away. So I think 6 to 8 weeks is a fair assessment.
Very good. Any questions of Ms. Curtis while she's at the podium?
Yes.
Oh, well, Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
I like the program. I think you've done a good job putting together a good program. I personally think this is going to be very successful. I'm enthusiastic about it. But the only question I have is, where did the name WISBANG come from?
WISBANG, you know, is a very old word. When we were coming up with a business name, we wanted something that stood out and had impact, because that's really what our whole strategy is about. Our firm is delivering ideas with impact. And so whiz-bang was one of those words, I think it was in the 20s, where it was just, that was a whiz-bang idea.
What authorized agency?
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, you all see this the report, but for the folks at home, it's to authorize the agency to enter into an agreement with WhizBank to develop a marketing program for the city / agency.
Okay, I so move.
There's a motion.
I'll second that.
And a second. And this is a roll call vote. So roll call.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, so now let's go down. I know the last time that Ms. Curtis and I think Jessica were here, they presented to us a positioning statement, and we had given them some direction, and they have now come back with a couple of alternatives. So let's discuss that, and then we can move to the tagline. So this is attachment one.
Okay.
And the first one said Grover Beach is a community. You know, there's no one here to put something overhead, is there? Okay. The first one says Grover Beach is a community-oriented coastal city offering diverse and affordable housing, convenient central coast location, and loads of opportunities to spread your wings. And so then there are two, A and B. The first one says Grover Beach is a community-oriented coastal city offering diverse and affordable housing, a convenient central coast location, and loads of opportunity to spread your wings. And then B, Grover Beach is a community-oriented beach town offering diverse and affordable housing, a convenient central coast location, and loads of opportunity to spread your wings. So the question to the council members is, do we like the original positioning statement or either of the two alternatives that were presented this evening?
Well, I have an answer for myself.
Well, let's hear what your answer is.
I like the current statement with a modification, basically. I don't like the other two because I don't like to say that we're only a beach town. I think beach town has connotations of maybe unpleasant connotation of rowdyism and young kids wandering around and things that we don't want to sell as our vision.
Okay.
But I think we are to say something about having a beach and its amenities, so I would modify the current position, and after the term city offering, I'd insert a phrase, beach access and amenities, so it would read, Grover Beach is a community-oriented coastal city offering beach access and amenities, diverse and affordable housing, a convenient central coast location, and loads of opportunity to spread your wings. I think that covers the beach thing, and it covers an old fashion that I think is more appropriate to what we're trying to do.
Okay. Councilmember Bright, let's have some discussion.
Well, I think we specifically said beach town, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, well, it is under B, it is, yeah.
I personally like the beach town. But the loads of opportunity, Debbie, she took a bit of exception to that. She thought maybe we should use the word plenty instead of loads. She thinks plenty is a little more sophisticated but still informal. So we can add that to your list of suggestions. And I think, well, whatever. I mean, I'm good with either one. But personally, I like the beach town idea, so I prefer B.
With the change of loads to plenty?
Yes, I think I do like plenty rather than loads, as a matter of fact.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
I'm really not picky about it. I'm really not. I'll go along with the majority.
Actually.
Well, there's a way to get out of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let me just say, and I like all the comments that have been made, and I can certainly understand where Councilmember Myers is coming from, and I know that we had talked about adding the word beach in this, so I think I'm okay with beach town because I think people understand we're already a city rather than repeating that we're a coastal city. And loads versus plenty. I'm okay with plenty,
okay,
I guess.
I don't like plenty.
What's your view on plenty?
I'm not. I'm fine with loads. I really didn't think of it until Debbie had sent this to me, and I thought, well, I'll go with. I'm really not. I think a beach town, and it wouldn't even dawn on me that you wouldn't have beach access.
And I guess that's the question, is it implied? If you feel it's implied, then okay.
I do.
In beach town, it's implied. My only question to amenities, at this juncture in time, the amenities, as we know from our SWOT analysis.
Yeah, but you know, this is not going to be out.
Emerging.
Yeah, but people don't know. Amenities is not a common name, common word.
Yeah. Right. Something only a lawyer would think of, probably.
Quit it out yourself. Good idea. Okay. So we've got one council. So Councilmember Myers was talking about the current one with the changes. I believe Councilmember Wright was saying B, and there was a debate on whether it's with the word plenty, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. You like that? So Mayor Pro Tem looks like B is... Okay.
Boy, that $2 worked, huh?
Sorry, Bob.
No, we're sort of shifting chafe anyway, but so it's,
yeah. Okay, so I think we're going to go with B and change the word load to plenty.
They're all.
Okay. Now let's move down to current tagline. And the current one, the one that was presented to us previously, said Grover Beach, a great place to spread your wings. Revised tagline, there's four options. Grover Beach, spread your wings. Spread your wings at Grover Beach. Or would that be better to say spread your wings in Grover Beach? Grover Beach, where you can spread your wings. Grover Beach, come spread your wings.
Actually, that's...
I'm going to say, for me, the first one is just simple and to the point and says...
Under the revised?
No, the revised, yeah. The revised one. Grover Beach, spread your wings. It's...
I like the current tagline.
Okay. I like the last tagline because it implies come spread your wings. It's an invitation. The rest of them are not an invitation. This is an invitation.
Ooh.
It still says spread your wings.
You've got to be careful who you invite.
Well, we're going to keep you out there. Don't worry about
that. That's a great point.
Yeah.
That's very true,
that's
you know.
That's a great point.
I'm going to put on Debbie's hat now, and she says, revised tagline. I prefer the first tagline, less is more. Particularly in advertising copy. So, there you have it. She's the expert.
We know who's an expert. Those who declare themselves are experts are experts.
Who, you know, up here. Anyway, so that's that. I told her I would
still stand by
be her mouthpiece, and I was.
No, thank you for bringing that up. I know I'm not going to let Ellen off the hot seat. You have as a professional, is there one that you have a preference on?
It would be the first one, Grover Beach, spread your wings, because it isn't there as the implied of if you say spread your wings, it's asking for that action. And second to that would be come spread your wings. But short and to the point is the way to go, because a lot of times the copy, whatever we're writing, will always end up wrapping it up into that idea.
Okay,
you're both good.
I know. Okay. I actually did like the original, but I know we gave direction, and I can live with the first one, Grover Beach, spread your wings, and we're going to have, and so we had talked about the monarch butterfly sort of being our new mascot, correct?
Right, and what we're going to do moving forward is we'll do a little exploratory of how to visually treat this line, so it'll have its own little visual treatment. It won't take place of a logo, but it will be thematic. And so we'll add the monarch in that.
Okay.
That would be the direction to give the designers, and what they come up with, well, we'll see.
Okay. Anyone feel strongly one way or the other?
No, not really. I mean, I like the current one as well. So, I mean, I can go either way.
You know, I like the current one, and I Spread Your Wings is good, and Come Spread Your Wings is, was my first choice and still is.
But, I mean, if... Well, okay. you came up with the current one originally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's, you didn't think that was too long, did you?
No, and at Wisbing, we have this, I know this sounds cliched. You're going to learn a lot of cliched marketing stuff when you work with us, but we don't put anything on the rail that's not for sale. So we wouldn't show you anything that we wouldn't want to use and that we wouldn't think wouldn't be effective. So with that said, taglines, you can, there's many iterations of them, and I can see us using many of these iterations, but to go with the official, you have to pick one.
Yeah.
And what you, you know, I don't know if you want to go as far as looking into trademark or copyright, but.
Well, it's very good, the first one is. I mean, the current tagline is very good.
So, Bob, did you happen to run this informally by any staff?
No, honestly.
Well, you know, and the point really is, you know, having not worked in marketing, but certainly worked in a profession where a lot of messaging was helping us sell a project.
Really, when I said Grover Beach, Spread Your Wings, I kind of went, huh?
Yeah.
So I think maybe we need a little more, a great place to spread
great
your wings.
Great place to spread your wings. Let's go with that.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
We got consensus.
We got consensus. Love that. Thank
wow.
you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. See, your first instinct was right. Okay. I think we're good. So let's move on to item CCIA2, and this is the fiscal year 11-12 goals and work program. City Manager, Executive Director Peralt.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. As you recall, we conducted a special workshop at the end of March, and the purpose of that workshop was to develop a series of goals and a work program that would essentially help to guide the formation of the budget as we complete that process over the next month to 6 weeks. As we went through that process, there was a considerable amount of direction provided by the council, and staff took that direction and reformatted this in accordance with what we heard. So with the council's indulgence, it wasn't my intent to go through this line by line unless you desired to do that, but simply to ask that the council take a look at the draft goals and work program to ensure that it did we did capture what you had intended, and then adopt by motion the goals and work program for the coming fiscal year.
Okay. Let me say that staff did a really good job of capturing our conversation, and I had talked with the city manager a bit, but after having time to mull this over, I'm just thinking that there needs to be some embellishment, that there needs to be maybe some milestones, and so that staff has clear direction, so that we have a clear expectation, and that it would certainly be something that we could use in any evaluation of the city manager and his staff. So what I did do, and I know it's going to complicate the issue because I should have been track changes, but I was up pretty late last night. Mm. And I have some suggestions that I'd like to put out for your consideration. And it's really not a lot of deviation from what staff has brought forward. And so that's probably the toughest thing is because, like I said, I didn't do the track changes or provide a legislative. So if you could give this to the city manager and then ultimately you get it to the city clerk. So I think all the components are there under economic development. And, you know, I was was thinking that really the simplest goal under economic development is just to, and he said this, but just say implement the city's economic development strategy. And I think the reason that I'm suggesting this, and we can, underneath that it says strengthen the city's economic base by promoting the city for business and tourism and working cooperatively with economic organizations and businesses to retain existing jobs and create employment opportunities. I think that just kind of clarifies. The first bullet is pretty much what staff has said, and I was thinking that we've been working at this for a while and was thinking that a timeline might be decent. You know, these are suggested timelines, and maybe the better way to do this is have staff take a look at the timelines and come back and say, based on resources, we can get this done by this time frame.
Right, but I think timelines are very important.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives you something to shoot for and something to measure your progress by.
I agree with the mayor's thought. We already have the staff looking at timelines and reporting.
Absolutely,
their
I agree.
What they can do.
So then the second bullet talked about implementation or beginning construction of phase one, I think, which is what staff had talked about and had a time frame on there, but they can come back with a different timeline, and we'll just have to see how that works. And then the marketing program, just further clarification. The fourth bullet was the one I've talked about, completing the city technology upgrades, which means including the website redesign, online registration and payment services, because I think that's all critical. And then under that, the standards. I wasn't sure, Bob, if that is just a requirement, or were you thinking about doing that with sidewalks?
With sidewalks.
Okay. So maybe since the meeting is moving on this evening, and my apologies for not getting this to anyone sooner. But is this something that maybe we can put off for some time, or have staff take a look at this and see if there's some items in here that are off base or cannot be accomplished in this time frame?
Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to give them time to take a look at it and then come back.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I'm glad to see the bike lanes included in there, because that was something that I was interested in. I know Debbie was as well.
Okay.
Because that's something we talked about.
Yeah, and I think most of my suggested additions were up front, but I think for the most of the nine goals, that staff did a really good job of capturing everything and putting it together. So I think as you look. You go beyond the first two, you really start to see that, on the public administration, under transportation and parking, under parks, there are very few revisions.
We'll check that out.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to have a little time to look at this myself.
We all need time to digest.
I would suggest bringing it back at the first meeting in June.
Okay. That'll give you plenty of time for budget.
Well, what I'll do is generally the sense of where this is going is pretty much in line with what you had previously talked about. We'll continue to use that is a guideline for developing the budget, and then we can tweak it according to dates, et cetera, that you agree to.
Okay. Do that, and because I think it also breaks out the task, and you can kind of give us the input on, is this doable,
right.
Is this premature, things like that.
Right.
So that way, like I said, the council expectation, the timeline is something that I think would help you move this forward and identify what the priorities are, because I know that we have limited resources, and I know that we've staffed up a little bit, but still a lot is on your plates. So we're just trying to lay out the roadmap for the next 2 years.
Sure.
Okay. Okay.
That's it.
So on this, then, we will, staff will come back on the first meeting in June,
right.
and I think that we'll take action then. So if there's nothing else, it is 9:11, and we are adjourned.
Oh, my God.